Welcome to Athens Happens. I'm Beau Kuhn, Senior Digital Producer at The New Political. Athens Happens is a podcast brought to you by The New Political, a student publication dedicated to explaining the nuances of Ohio University, Athens, and state politics. You can find new episodes at thenewpolitical.com or wherever else podcasts can be downloaded. Today, Managing Editor Zach Zimmerman is interviewing Ohio University Assistant Professor Dr. Tom Suttis about the ongoing redistricting battle in Ohio.
All right, I'm here with Dr. Tom Suttis. Professor, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So you have been writing about politics for a long time. You've been writing about Ohio politics for a long time. Have you ever seen any kind of, not necessarily just redistricting, but any kind of political battle between the two parties that has, dragged on for this long and, gotten so out of hand as the current redistricting process?
No, I have not. And I've been here for the tail end of the 1981-82 redistricting and for the 91-92 redistricting. And I was a close observer of the ones in 2001 and 2012. So I've been through four of these from a distance, and two of them up close and two from a distance. And this one has by far been the most acrimonious that I've seen, and also the lengthiest.
Yeah. Why do you think we've reached this point of just the, commission, breaking down, and, people are facing contempt?
Well, one thing is because this particular process is new to Ohio. All the other years, there was a board called the Apportionment Board, composed of the governor, the auditor, secretary of state, and a couple of legislators. That had been in place for almost 150 years or so. So that process was a little bit different, and it was a known process. This is new. This is the first time since these amendments to the Constitution were adopted in 2015 and 2018. So people are kind of learning their way through it. Secondly, I think it's fair to say, and people have noticed this nationally, that the level of acrimony between the two political parties has increased significantly. There's just more up close and personal kind of politicking. And the third thing is that Ohio, in some respects, has changed a little tiny bit. Ohio was considered to be the bellwether state presidentially, and yet it really wasn't. It has been and has not been because the population trends in the state are changing, which is to say that it appears that Democrats are becoming more concentrated in suburbia and in the cities, Republicans much more in Appalachia and in outer suburbia. So it's hard to draw districts that are necessarily that evenly matched statewide. In urban areas, it isn't as hard. So it's, again, learning a new process, number one. Number two, those that taking part in the process are new actors. We're not here in 2011, 2010. And thirdly, a new process that has been tested in court and is still ongoing right now, litigation-wise.
So when the Redistricting Commission was created, by the, amendment to the state constitution, it was passed with like 71% of the vote in 2015. I mean, what did you think of the commission, or just the idea of the commission at the time it was created? And I mean, are you surprised that we've reached this point?
I hate to, it's easy for me to say I'm not surprised, but I am not surprised by it. In the backdrop of the discussion over the 2015 amendment and the 2018 amendment, political insiders, i.e. the cynics who really know the process, said it would not make a material difference because there still would essentially be the same clash of each party wanting to maximize its advantages, politically speaking, to get the maximum number of seats it could in each chamber of the legislature. What's a little bit new this time is the fact that it's dragged on a little bit longer than you'd think with an election coming up on May 3rd anyway, ostensibly, with seats undecided about who's going to be in what district and where they're going to be located. That's a little different, I think, than people expected. But I did not expect a seriously radical change. I thought there'd be some clashing. I just did not think it would go on this long and be this acrimonious.
Do you think that, the commission will continue on into the future? Do you think that they'll try and, change the way the redistricting in Ohio works again at some point?
I think after this, they'll all want to have a long breather if we're talking about it for a good while. But Remember, there's also a complication now because it's really a two-track process going on in terms of the state legislative districts themselves and also, to some extent, congressional districts, but especially legislative districts for the General Assembly. The Redistricting Commission is meeting probably even as we speak, or will be very soon, if not today, then tomorrow, to work on a fourth plan, which may or may not make the cuts, legally speaking. At the same time, though, as you may know, there's a federal lawsuit involving a three-judge panel sitting in Ohio to consider an alternative argument about the districts and so forth, because the Secretary of State really wants us to go forward if we can with one election on May 3rd. So we clearly have two decision tracks going on here, and it's a matter of which one becomes the final plan, the one that the Redistricting Commission is considering or working on right now, and the second one, which is basically the third plan, which was the state Supreme Court rejected, but the plaintiffs would like the federal three-judge panel to consider and act on. And so you're going to see some kind of suspenseful who's on first sort of discussions happening about the whole thing politically.
I yesterday was talking to Debbie Quivy over at the Board of Elections office, and we were talking for an article that I'm working on, and we were talking about, you know, the Board of Elections preparing for the primary election and, you know, just kind of the uncertainty about is it going to happen on May 3rd. And right. She was putting emphasis on, you know, right now there's going to be an election on May 3rd. She put an emphasis, though, on the only two Democrats on the commission, Minority Leader Alison Russo and Senator Vernon Sykes, asking the Supreme Court to potentially move the primary back.
Yes.
Is there like any kind of precedent in Ohio for like anything like that you can think of at all?
Well, you may recall 2 years ago at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, mm-hmm. the election was moved around because of the suddenness that we remember about St. Patrick's Day of 2000, which was an election year, as even numbered years are for state offices and so forth. The election was moved. However, it was moving the primary entirely because of the redistricting reapportionment thing. I can't recall what's happening before, no. Now, that does not mean that I am correct because, as you know, the most dangerous words in journalism are first, last, always, and never.
Right.
But at the same time, I think it is unprecedented, and I think the arguments for not doing it are not necessarily good arguments, but I think it's going to end up having to be done that way, moving it into sometime in June, assuming they get an agreement, and even then they could be still debating districts, I suppose, in theory anyway.
Do you have any thoughts about the state Supreme Court's role in all of this? Just, you know, in the headlines, you know, a lot of, you know, what's been talked about involves, you know, is Pat DeWine going to recuse himself because his father, the governor, is involved? And also, you know, there's been talks about Republicans potentially impeaching Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. Do you have any thoughts on any of that?
I thought of something I should have mentioned, not in this conversation, but to someone earlier. I think the impeachment thing is not going to happen. I think that's was people shooting off their mouths and exercising their frustration over the way things have come down with the court decision. That's not going to happen, I don't think. Now, watch, if I were so accurate, I would have won the state lottery by now and be rich and living on Monte Carlo, but I don't think it's going to happen. Justice DeWine has said he will not recuse himself unless it's the contempt part of the case in which his father potentially could be held in contempt by the judges of the Supreme Court majority. I think what's happened, and this is a little bit different than even in Pennsylvania, our Supreme Court historically has been basically a pretty passive body. You know, constitutionally, you read in the textbooks, and it's all accurate in theory. We have three equal branches of government everywhere, in federal government and in the state government, executive, legislative, and judicial. In fact, for a long, long time, Ohio's governorship was very powerful among the 50 state governorships, but our legislature has been kind of the supreme branch for a long time and does pretty much what it pleases because the courts have been more looking toward helping to enable what they want to do as opposed to saying you can't do certain things. So I think that although the judges or the legislators that backed the plans that have been blocked by the court probably thought they might get stopped one time, I'm not sure they thought they could stop three times and consecutively over this dispute. Again, part of it is that the court is divided politically, 3-4, with 3 Democrats and 4 Republicans, except the Chief Justice has voted with the 3 Republican justices to block the plans that the commission has proposed. But, I mean, they're supposed to be independent actors anyway. They're party affiliations in theory. It's interesting when it suits people, they say party affiliation shouldn't matter. But when it also suits them, they say, that's a terrible thing, party affiliation and judges. So it depends on whose ox is being gored, basically, that way. But I think there's a lot of legislative surprise about the fact the legislative branch is being sort of told what to do and what not to do by the judges. That's not the way it's been in Ohio for a long time.
Like, how do you think all of this is going to end? Do you think there's going to be fair maps? Do you think we're going to be stuck with a 4-year map? Do you think the commission's going to be ultimately held in contempt?
I think we'll have a 4-year map. I'm not sure how soon it will happen. Mm-hmm. I think we'll have a primary that will be held in June, maybe late May. I personally, and this is just a matter of looking at the personalities involved and other things, don't think a contempt motion will go forward. However, what no one has talked about, and I mean, I'm not saying no one ever because I'm not omniscient, much as I might kid myself about that, is that members of the commission, I'm trying to think now, at least 3 or 4 of them are lawyers. And independently of any contempt finding, of course, lawyers in Ohio are subject to discipline by the Supreme Court because that's the supreme authority for disciplining the bar. So they could be worried about something like that. But no, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it was designed to be a wake-up call. I hate that expression, but it actually works sometimes. A wake-up call to say, we're serious about this. Let's get with the program and get something that's going to be passed constitutionally to meet muster for this plan. The other thing I want to mention real quickly is the fact that there's been a lot of complaints by those that don't want to move the primary. To say that we're having 2 primaries would cost this much money, and to which I would answer, they simply ask the question, everything costs money, and is it too much to ask to spend people about $1.90 per Ohioan to move the election to assure a democratic process is undertaken? I don't think that's too much money at all. I think it's just a matter of the cost of doing business in Ohio for election processes, but that's me and not everybody else.
I know we've discussed... You know, we're both very familiar with the state of Pennsylvania, and we've talked about their state legislature before. But, like, looking at other states, Pennsylvania, for example, we've talked about how their legislature operates, and they don't have a map yet. There's a bunch of other states around the country that are still in the process of creating their maps for reasons, you know, that are varying, both similar and different to Ohio. Would you say that, you know, everything that's been going on with all of this, would you say this is something that's very, you know, like specific to Ohio, just as far as the partisanship? Have you seen anything similar like this in other states?
I'm not a close student of other states, except my anecdotes about Harrisburg being a den of iniquity, just for anecdotes. But I think this is a national thing in the sense that people in Washington woke up to a couple of facts, one of which was that legislatures really do draw congressional districts, number one, or their commissions do it, and number two, that they elect district legislators who'd make decisions about things like congressional districts and so forth. The second thing is the technology has gotten so incredible with cartography and mapping and so forth, mm-hmm. that the ability to be very, very surgically precise in drawing maps that exquisitely favor you by every possible measure is so much more feasible than it was. I'll tell you a little anecdote about that, if I may. Ohio's first attempt to use computers was in 1971, and the computers were about as big as this room, or whatever, right. As you may know, nothing like we have now. And it was, the governor's name was John J. Gilligan, who mm-hmm. was governor from 71 to 75. And he was on the apportionment board, as governors were. And they drew a map using this very, very, very old-fashioned Volkswagen-sized computer that left off Zanesville. And everyone called it Gilligan's Island because there was this big hole in the map where this city existed. It wasn't shown as a district of anybody's property. So it was a nickname for the governor. But now, of course, you could go down to almost the individual house or residence or farm and allocate it depending on other parameters and so forth. One other thing I want to mention about the complexity of this whole thing, if you've got a big county like Cuyahoga or Franklin or Hamilton, mm-hmm. Ohio has two requirements that you have to keep in mind, one of which is you must rotate names on the ballot. So if your name is, because people do sometimes vote based on the first name they see at the top of the listing, so they move the names around. Secondly, Ohio has tons and tons of special districts for taxation, for schools, for libraries, for hospitals, for port authorities, for all kinds of taxing abilities, taxing entities. So, for example, a veteran of the Franklin County Board of Elections told me one time there are 1,200 different ballot types must be used in every election in Franklin County, which is the biggest county in the state, but has about 1 million some people in it. Mm-hmm. But that's an extraordinary thing for proofing, for checking, for printing, getting the boundaries right. So, but with the computerization we have now, you can do some pretty amazing things, including allocating voters to maximize your advantage. And that makes it kind of a real Rubik's Cube, to use an unoriginal analogy.
Yeah. Something that I wanted to touch on real quick, because obviously if you read The Plain Dealer, Dispatch, The Inquirer, Capital Journal, they've been talking about redistricting for a while now, and that's a statewide issue. I wanted to ask you about how redistricting could potentially affect the local area and how it could affect Athens and Athens County. Because as we've seen, you know, both state legislative and congressional maps have been approved and then rejected by the Supreme Court. And the state Supreme Court, that is. And, you know, there's been versions of the congressional map, I know, that sort of split up Appalachia. Is there, you know, any, you know, what do you think about, you know, redistricting? Could it potentially, you know, do something like that to Athens?
Looking at the different maps that have been prepared, first of all, to consider legislative maps for the General Assembly, it appears that J. Edwards' district is going to essentially be, still have Athens County as its core, mm-hmm. but the individual counties that will be part of it will vary somewhat, additional counties. The state Senate district of Senator
Hoagland.
Yes, thank you very much. My age is showing today, as well as a few other things I want to talk about. Senator Hoagland, sometimes I've seen some iterations of the Senate map where Athens is or is not in that particular Senate district. However, it does appear to me that every iteration of the congressional map has included Congressperson Balderson as our congressperson, even though we have the new district that was formerly Steve Cyrus's district, or the mm-hmm. not new district, the district that was Steve Cyrus's district, a Columbus district, although I should say the Balderson district reaches into Franklin County as well. So I don't think any of the iterations of the legislative map would necessarily change Athens County's circumstances much. And Mr. Balderson has got some seniority now, as does Senator Hoagland, as does Mr. Edwards. So that won't rock the boat too much one way or the other, I don't think, locally. But the thing to keep in mind, and this is not a slam on civic participation, you know, we elect so many people in this country. No country has more elected office holders than the United States of America. Mm-hmm. We hold so many elections. Every time you turn around, there's an election for something or other, which is a way of giving voters good control over taxation and spending. But the fact of the matter is, I think if you were to talk to people on the sidewalk, whether here or in downtown Columbus or in Wapakoneta or any place in the state, and talk about districting or reapportionment or congressional seats, they might not know what you're talking about. That's not a slam on them or a slam on you. It's just the fact that it's such a complicated topic that people don't necessarily see the consequences. It's the insiders that do. Right. The local leaders that take pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Do you potentially do you think that, you know, all of the drama of the whole, you know, process dragging on, do you think it could potentially have a impact on the elections this fall? I know there's, you know, been other issues like the House energy bill and stuff like that, but do you think redistricting potentially could?
It could certainly affect the margins of the two parties in the Ohio House of Representatives, particularly. Right now, if the, several of the plans had been enacted, you'd have 54 Republicans and 45 Democrats possibly in the Ohio House of Representatives, which would be far fewer Republicans than you have now. You have right now a veto-proof majority for Republicans in the Ohio House and in the state Senate. I think there's a disconnect between statewide elections for places like the U.S. Senator and the governorship and elections for the legislature. I mean, again, I'm not being critical of anybody, but if you ask a person on the sidewalk in a bigger city, especially within multiple districts, who his or her state senator representative is, they couldn't tell you probably. And it's the aware people that are, pay attention to those sorts of races and so forth. I think it depends. The governorship can make a difference in terms of turnout, though. And if voters are excited to be Republicans voting for Mike DeWine or Democrats voting for one of the two Democratic candidates who may be the nominee, that could push up overall turnout for those parties respectively in the legislative races. And if there are enough competitive seats, they might push things upward. But I'd be very surprised, absent in a non-presidential year, the Democrats could win back the Ohio House, even if districts are seen as pretty much acceptable to them, would happen. Just because this state's fundamentally Republican, although it has Democrats can be very competitive, but when you get to small districts of 110,000 people or so, they're mostly all one stripe or the other, politically speaking. You know, mm-hmm. they tend to be one party or the other.
Yeah,
it's like if you were running candidates in Pennsylvania in, say, Lawrence County, which is Republican as all get out for the most part, mm-hmm. you probably could run anybody except maybe Joe Paterno if he were alive and running as a Democrat. He might be able to win, but otherwise you could not, I don't think.
Right. Ohio hasn't had a Democrat as governor since Ted Strickland in the late 2000s and, you know, John Kasich served for 8 years, now Mike DeWine is serving. Recently, both the state Senate and the state House have been controlled by pretty significant Republican majorities.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously the state has been trending red. Do you think that even if this whole process has been a total mess, that as you talked about whether the map, you know, gives the state house, like a 54-45 advantage for the Republicans, do you think that, you know, the prospect of a more fair map could potentially alter the direction of Ohio politics at all?
I don't know that it could or not, but I do want to clarify one thing just for our all of us to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after all, we have had a Democratic senator, Sherrod Brown, now. I think this is his third term, mm-hmm. and he's probably favored to win again, depending on who his opponent is, if he runs again. Statewide races can be very competitive. I mean, it's also true what you said about the governorship, and that has been an interesting trend. But keep in mind also, Ohio voted for Barack Obama both times he ran,
right.
which is interesting, too, because it shows that things are not necessarily all mm-hmm. open and shut. The legislature is a special case. The Democratic Republicans have run the state Senate since December or January of 1985 continuously.
Hmm.
And what I can tell from my research, I didn't go deep into the 1800s, but I think that's the longest stretch one party's controlled either chamber since we had statehood in 1803. The Ohio House has been Republican since January 95, except for 2 years, 2009, 2010,
mm-hmm.
Because when Barack Obama ran in 08, he did well enough in the state, of course, to get Democrats to turn out for the Ohio House races. Then, of course, for reasons that are the nature of a Democratic Party, which is basically a quarrel waiting to happen among their followers, they didn't seem to sustain their momentum and to keeping that majority going into the next 2 years. So I think it's not necessarily the state changing that much. I think there's arguments both ways about that. Our good friend and fellow Bobcat, Kyle Kondik, has made an interesting case that the state is less of a bellwether than it was, and he would know. He does great research on this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we need to wait for one more statewide cycle of statewide elections for governor and then for president in 2 years to see where things really stand. I think that it still remains to be seen what the patterns are, because issues are so local about things. I mean, sometimes it's agricultural prices for commodities in western Ohio. Other times it's things like the depression in manufacturing in Mahoning County and Trumbull County and so forth. I mean, look at it long range. Licking County is a Republican county, but if you have bringing 10,000 Californians or whatever it is for Intel, is it going to stay that way? I don't know, because population change is going to make a difference in a county's makeup. Delaware County, suburban Columbus, was Republican as all get out for generations and is becoming more Democratic slowly and surely. It's become Columbus suburban and so forth. So I think we need to think of it as a diorama, not as a snapshot to see where things are going that way. At the moment, you have to say, though, that the governor is favored for reelection because if he's nominated, which I think he will be, because Republicans have never not reelected a governor since 1958, and that's a long time to go without that happening, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen again. And so I think it's still very much the jury out on the prospects of the statewide, how you describe the state in terms of its being blue or red on a permanent basis for a while yet.
Aside from redistricting, how do you think that, you know, some of these demographic changes that we're talking about, how do you think they're going to affect election trends in the future?
Well, one thing I've been reading about, and it's, I have to say it's been reading about as opposed to getting in and needing to dough myself, has been that Republicans are concerned to some extent about using, again, demographic stereotypes. Suburban women, because of the perceived occasional crudeness of President Trump. And so therefore, they're pitching a lot of these issues about schools and things as a way of getting the suburban homemaker, parent, mother of school children to pay closer attention to some of these economic and cultural clashes that are going on nationally and regionally around the country. At the same time, you also have, even though statistics don't suggest this, or not, you have a greater consciousness of urban violence and of crime, and that's partly appealing to the urban male and the suburban male and guns and all the rest of that sort of thing and so forth. Ohio's two primary trends, which indicate demography that may influence elections, are we becoming an older state? And I guess I'm an example of that because I'm older. And my cohort was part of the so-called baby boom after the Second World War. And so that blob of people, and blob isn't a bad word for sometimes, so this amorphous group of so-called boomers is going into its senior citizen years, makes it more conservatism in general. Second thing is that Ohio's lost manufacturing jobs. And so Ohio's caught in kind of a secular decline, as the bond brokers would say, secular meaning long-term worldly decline. The last time Ohio's per capita personal income matched the nation's income, per capita personal income, was 1969, ladies and gentlemen. And that gets oftentimes lost. Now, it doesn't mean on individual counties that do beautifully well. For example, whether living in the Hill District or in Ligonier makes a difference because your income trends and that sort of thing. But at the same time, there is basically a kind of a hardscrabble situation for economic betterment. Where I'm from, Youngstown, was a place that never could imagine voting for Republican for president, not since the 1930s, and yet Mahoning County voted for President Trump, which again was kind of unheard of because of the decline of industry up there. Manufacturing has led to a kind of, because manufacturing jobs paid good wages, and they still do if they're available, which is why Intel is going to be interesting to see how that plays out. So I think those two things help inform voting patterns, and I think, again, older people tend to become somewhat conservative, and I wouldn't say I'm one of them, but I would say that does happen a lot. And secondly, we have to find ways, whether regardless of party, to advance per capita personal incomes and household income growth in the state, because we know life is not getting cheaper as far as economics are concerned. That's part of the press right now with fuel prices, by the way. People are actually seeing inflation in a cup, in a palpable way. They look at this number on the gas pump, and they can tell right now, oh, it isn't Wonder Bread going up 5 cents a loaf. They can see this very clearly and starkly, what's going on with the economy. So that's another issue, too. And I don't know how that plays out, because President Biden's popularity is not excessively high by any measure right now.
Do you think that there is anything relating to redistricting and, you know, kind of the, you know, coming elections that will be affected by, you know, these districts, but just especially the redistricting process that's ongoing. Is there anything in particular that you think is being overlooked and not discussed enough?
Well, the thing that has occurred to me a little bit, and this discussion has helped me think about this even more, is, you know, until 1965, 66, the state constitution required every county to get at least one member of the Ohio House. So Benton County, population 10,000, had a seat in the Ohio House. Now, of course, you have to have 110,000 people to get one seat in the Ohio House, because that's the difference. So cities became more important beginning in the era, starting in the 1960s. Basically now, other than Columbus, our cities have all basically either gotten smaller and they have not grown in terms of people. I think the urgency of appealing to suburban voters who have kids in school, who are paying real estate taxes to support schools, who are concerned about things like social and cultural issues is going to be paramount coming around. So I think it's going to be a greater emphasis on exurban and urban areas in the state. I mentioned, by the way, today in the governor's State of the State speech, I didn't hear it, I read it, parts of it. He emphasized speaking out about development in our part of the state, Appalachia, which if the promise is as good as if the delivery matches the promise, that's a very positive thing for our region of Ohio. Because, as you know, there are very vast areas of the state and counties in eastern Ohio, southeastern Ohio, that haven't seen growth for a long, long time. And you have people that basically don't have a future unless they leave and go to Columbus or Cleveland or something to live and work. And so that can make a difference, too. But I think, again, I think the emphasis will be on suburban voters and what they're thinking and doing, because that's where the greatest single number of voters that participate and pay attention are.
Any other additional comments you have about the whole thing? Anything else you want to add?
I just, speaking as an observer, kind of wish it would get settled either one way or the other, because I think that in the meanwhile, we have so many other state issues that need paid attention to as well. That does to say that the democratic process, small d, is never neat and packaged, and so therefore there'll be lots of discussions about this down the road. But I think there's a certain kind of fatigue setting in among bystanders about this whole process right now. And that's understandable, but it's dangerous, because things can happen when you aren't paying attention. And that's my experience. I'm waiting for court decisions to happen at 6 o'clock on Friday afternoons anymore to see what's going to happen for the weekend news cycle and so forth.
Dr. Suttis, thank you so much for joining us. It's greatly appreciated.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Athens Happens. Make sure to check out thenewpolitical.com for podcast episodes and other content. Thank you, and until next time.